Okay, we are beginning our study of Philippians chapter 1, starting at verse 12. So would someone like to read for us this first section? I think it would be good to read through verse 18a, through the end of that paragraph there. So 12 to 18a.
Now I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel, so that my imprisonment in the cause of Christ has become well known throughout the whole Praetorian Guard and to everyone else. And that most of the brethren, trusting in the Lord because of my imprisonment, have far more courage to speak the word of God without fear. Some, to be sure, are preaching Christ even from envy and strife, but some also from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am appointed for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition rather than from pure motives, thinking to cause me distress in my imprisonment. What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in this I rejoice. How far? Yes, I will, and I
yep.
will rejoice.
That's good. All right. So, what is going on here? What are we learning about Paul's situation? Okay, he's in the clink, right? He's in prison. We don't know exactly where. There's a lot of conjecture as to a lot of debate among the scholars about where and when the book was written and what imprisonment was this. It's really not that important. Most probably, I guess the majority of scholars believe that he was in Rome, and it was not during his final imprisonment. This isn't written that late, but during one of his earlier imprisonments, possibly the one that's recorded in Acts. Okay, so that's what we have. So now I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. As a result, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I am in chains for Christ. And because of my chains, most of my brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. So let's talk about Paul's attitude in prison.
Positive.
Yeah, pretty positive. Which is pretty amazing when you think about it, you know? I mean, you're in prison. And it's not like prison today, you know, where you're guaranteed food and you're sleeping on a bed and the TV and, you know, commissary and all these different things. That's not what this is like. This is pretty difficult duty here. And Paul is in prison, but yet he's looking at it from a different perspective. What is his perspective?
Eternal. I mean, he's advancing the gospel.
Right. So his focus is eternal. His focus is on the calling that God has placed on his life. And he's evaluating his present experiences and his present situation based on not his own comfort, right? But rather based on is it advancing the call that he has on his life or not? That's a different standard, isn't it? And he says that it is advancing for two reasons. What are the two reasons that he names here?
The palace guards know that he's chained for Christ.
Okay. So something has been happening within the prison system, okay? He has been granted access to a group of people and a whole range of people that would have never been exposed to the gospel. So these are probably Roman soldiers that are his caretakers, his guards. And now the gospel is moving through these guards and into levels of the military, into who knows. He talks to them about them as the palace guard. These guys are, they may have access even beyond right? Even beyond, and not just, they're not just COs, right? It may go beyond this. And who knows what the Lord is doing as the gospel is moving. And so Paul sees this as an opportunity and a reason why he's in prison. And then what's the other one?
He encourages his fellow brothers to be more courageous and fearless in their preaching.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So if Paul can handle prison, by golly, we're going to get out there and share the gospel. If we get arrested, we get arrested. Then we'll be in solidarity with Paul, right? And so it seems to have pumped people up, you know. You would expect that to be a deterrence. But, you know, as revolutionary movements go, sometimes, you know, you think about Martin Luther King Jr. getting thrown into prison in Alabama and all these other places, right? And he's writing letters from prison, and what happened? You know, it inspired a movement. It inspired those who were fighting for the cause, and they were not afraid. And the Apostle Paul has this same dynamic going here.
Well, we have that Canadian pastor that, you know, the SWAT team had to come and take him out and put him in chains, and, you know, that made the news. There were people that saw that he was, you know, he was going to stand up for his faith no matter what, you know, he put up a real fight.
Right.
You know, peaceful.
Yeah.
It struck me that people were looking and saying, that Paul, you know, look at his situation, how bad it is, but he hasn't given up, he hasn't changed. This Jesus must be for real. And so he was an inspiration to him, and it struck me how Jim Cowell
was
in a similar situation.
Right, right.
And he's been an inspiration to many people.
That's right. Yeah, all of us. Long-time believers or short-timers, right? Just to look at the faith that this guy's had in the face of tribulation, and it's inspiring. It's inspiring to push on for the cause of Christ. And that's exactly what we're talking about here. So all this is really important. And I think it's important for us when we think about when we're in difficult times. How much do we whine and moan and groan about our own physical comfort, right? Instead of thinking, how does this advance the cause of Christ? Has this given me access to different people? You know, I think about probably all the people that Jim has talked to in the course of his medical treatments, especially his dialysis, the hours of sitting there talking to the nurses and connecting with those people, and the way he's inspired people that he would have never come in contact with before. And God has used him. And God can use us in those ways if we're willing to stop looking at ourselves, you know, stop, you know, navel gazing, as my dad used to say, you know, and look up and look at the world like we're supposed to. Never heard that one? Yeah, my dad was rather colorful. So so verse 15, it is true that some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry, but others out of goodwill. The latter do so out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former preach Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing that they can stir up trouble for me while I am in chains. So what's going on here? What do we have happening? Paul sets up a comparison, right? Between two different groups of people.
Yeah, they thought Paul was a rival to them.
Okay.
He didn't preach the gospel exactly like they thought, or to the same people they thought he should be preaching to.
Okay.
So they set themselves up as rivals.
Okay.
And they saw them as that.
Okay. So we've got two rival camps, some that are pro-Paul, some that are anti-Paul.
Right.
But Paul's chains seem to have inspired both groups to go out and preach the gospel. Some because they love Paul and they've been inspired by his suffering. And others because they think they're going to get one over on Paul. Well, Paul's in prison. Now this is our chance to shine. This is our chance. So there's selfish ambition behind what they're doing. And Paul, of course, condemns one and lifts up the other, right? Huh?
Well, he says, what does it matter?
What is it?
No.
I don't care.
No, he doesn't. Look at verse 18. But what does it matter? The important thing is that in every way, whether from false motives or true, Christ is preached, and because of this I rejoice.
Could he be referencing indirectly some of the other letters he writes? He talks about these people who are preaching a different version of Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The Judaizers and what have you.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a big discussion in that among the scholars. And I think he's probably not talking about the Judaizers because he was so vehemently opposed to them. They had distorted the gospel to the point that it wasn't the gospel at all. So these are probably other people who are trying to plant churches and they want to be more influential in the church than Paul. But they're preaching the gospel, but they're doing it because of their own pride, and they want to be recognized. They want to have a following, right? They want to maybe have some power, right? They want to be the star.
Dan, this would be the beginning of denomination.
Beginning of denominations, okay? Here, and so it begins.
Yes.
What's interesting, though, is Paul's attitude, right?
Yeah.
Again, his laser focus on what? What is he focused on?
Spreading the gospel.
The gospel, right? What is most important to Paul? The advance of the gospel. And if I'm in chains and that advances the gospel, then so be it. Then I will leverage my present circumstances in order to advance the gospel in ways that it never could have been advanced before. And then I will rejoice. And if there are people that are preaching the gospel that I don't really like, that I think their motives are wrong, regardless, if they're preaching the gospel and the cause of Christ and the name of Christ is being advanced and people are coming to know Jesus, then I will rejoice. I'm not going to sit around and criticize them and try to break them down and try to destroy what they're doing. I'll let God sort out their motives. But if my calling, my focus is the advance of the gospel, then let it be, right? How can we apply that presently?
There are believers and there are unbelievers.
Uh-huh.
And God works through all of them. Those that oppose the gospel and those that are pro-gospel.
Okay.
And it's throughout biblical history.
All right. Yeah. God is at work. He is sovereign over the just and the unjust. But what about within the body of Christ? Do we agree with everyone?
No.
Would you attend Life Church?
Probably not.
Okay. I got some issues with Life Church, but they're advancing the gospel, right? You know, are there movements within Christianity where I would question motives?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Should I tear them down? No. Because they're advancing the gospel. God is sovereign over those people. They work for Him, not for me. Right? And so it's not my place to tear them down. As a matter of fact, it's to my advantage if my calling and my heart is to see the gospel advanced. So if people are getting to know the Lord through whatever ministry that I don't really necessarily agree with or have some questions about, as long as the gospel isn't twisted, right, to the point that it doesn't lead people to Christ, there may be some differences. It's okay. It's okay. And, you know, these churches, and there are a lot of churches that they won't work with anybody outside their tribe, right? They won't work with anyone outside their denomination. Because, you know, hey, we're the purists. We have the way, the correct doctrine, and the correct understanding of the gospel, and so we'll only promote our correct understanding of the gospel. Well, that's not what Paul's saying here, is it? And so we have to be really careful about our criticism. And I think it all comes, again, from we have to examine our own motivations. What is driving us? Is it a sincere desire to see the gospel advanced? Or is there some other motive that would cause us to have jealousy, that would cause us to have some kind of anger that's within us, and rivalry with other groups?
I always laugh when I think a good friend of mine calls some of the churches happy, clappy, crappy churches. he thinks they're just too far out there.
Right.
But then I tell him, you know, David was pretty happy and clappy when he was bringing the ark into the
That's
city.
Right. People thought he was crappy.
One of his wife thought he was pretty happy. You know? And, but then she didn't have any more children.
That's right.
I'd rather be like David.
Yeah.
Dan, it reminds me of the group. There was a group from Topeka. I don't know if they still exist. They were a splinter church. And I remember I went to over to Guts, they have a summer concert and the motorcycle thing, and they were there in force from Topeka, you know, just lambasting everything that Guts was doing, and because they had their, you know, and they've done this to many, many places, you know, they're very narrow
right.
Focus. I don't know that much. I feel like they're Bible reading Christians possibly, but just so focused on not being the Good Samaritan and being the one that...
Right. You know, yeah. So we need to be careful.
Look at it my way and no other way.
That's right. That's right. And so Paul's laying out for the church, I think, a really important principle. It's probably high time we paid attention, right, 2,000 years later, because we've seen this rivalry exist within the church. I mean, look at how the church has been torn apart into splinter groups. And it's okay? It's understandable that we have differences and we have different approaches, whether it's to worship styles or whether it's to little tiny tweaks of theology here and there. But we should be able to work together in harmony. We should be able to advance the cause of Christ and to work together as the church. It's interesting when you go into a place where the church doesn't exist, like when I went to Afghanistan, and you see people working together, Catholics and Protestants, Charismatics and Baptists, you know, the weirdest assortment of people all working together, loving one another, supporting one another. And you go, how did this happen? Well, because they're living in a place where the church doesn't exist, and any brother is my brother, right? And any ally is necessary, is appreciated. And so therefore, yet, it just changes the perspective completely.
Yet within the evangelical part
right.
of the church, you know, you can have something, you know, well, such as a pre-tribber versus an a-tribber versus a post-tribber.
Right.
And it can cause a split in the church.
That's
you
right.
know, because of that. There's some divided.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, over little tiny things.
Little tiny things.
Yeah. And Paul says, because Christ is preached, I rejoice. I rejoice. Mm-hmm. And isn't that better for your health? Mm-hmm. I mean, Paul's in prison. He's like, I just got to rejoice. Mm-hmm. I can't look at these things from a negative perspective. So then he goes on, verse 19 or verse 18b. Would someone pick it up and read there for us through 26?
For I know that through your prayers and God's provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, what has happened to me will turn out to be my deliverance. I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, but will have sufficient courage so that now, as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If I am to go on living in the body, this will be fruitful labor for me. Yet, what shall I choose? I don't know. I'm torn between the two. I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far. But it is more necessary for you that I remain in the body. How far?
Go to 26, through 26.
Okay. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and I will continue with all of you for your progress and joy in the faith. So that through my being with you again, your boasting in Jesus Christ will abound on account of me.
All right. Okay, so what's going on here?
He's certainly not afraid to die for the gospel.
Okay.
No, he's essentially
asking
the question that was asked in one of those Shakespeare plays, to be or not to be.
To die or not to die.
Really, I wonder if Shakespeare was thinking about this kind of passage.
Well, he probably didn't have a whole lot else to read. Bible's been influencing people for a long time.
Yeah.
So, yes, I will continue to rejoice, for I know that through your prayers and God's provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, what has happened to me will turn out for my deliverance. The word there is soteria, salvation. This will turn out for my salvation. Okay, so this is where we get our theological term, soteriology, right? Soteria, which is the word for salvation. And so we don't know when it says deliverance here, the translators, Bible translators who did the NIV, by choosing the word deliverance, they're kind of making an interpretive statement that leans it more toward the idea of getting out of prison, right? But the word salvation, most of the time when Paul uses, is talking more about salvation, the ultimate salvation, eschatological salvation, salvation from our sins, right? And so it's not contradictory, because it almost seems a little contradictory here, right? Doesn't it? Because he says, I know this will turn out for my deliverance, but yet I don't know whether I'm going to die or whether I'm going to live. Well, I thought you just said you know it's going to turn out for your deliverance. You're right? It's kind of like, and so he's mine confident in God's salvation.
Yeah. Mine gives that description as it means the rescue from danger.
Okay.
So, yes, he knows he's in danger, but he doesn't care because, I mean, you know, one side, if he's in danger, well, he could be killed. And yeah, as far as he's concerned, that's probably the best of all circumstances. But, you know, he can be saved from that danger, which would be a benefit to his ministry to the church.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, probably dealing with his trial and all that is, he's awaiting trial, we presume, if he's in prison. And that's probably what he's talking about. But we'll have sufficient courage so that now, as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death.
It occurs to me that some of his detractors who were forming these other denominations would have probably been saying things like, see, he's in prison, he's going to kill him. That proves he was wrong and I was right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what he's pointing out, that, you know, his death would be good for him. He didn't care either way. So that's a way of putting down that particular kind of viewpoint.
Right. Yeah. Christ will be exalted in my body, in my flesh, whether by life or by death.
Yeah. Reminds me of my favorite Old Testament Bible story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they just said it so simply and so eloquently, you know.
Right.
We know that, see if I can quote the original King James, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. You know, I think that was a neat posture to begin it with. You know, we don't really care if our words are right, but we know that God's going to deliver us.
Right.
Whether it be life or death, it doesn't even matter. So that was such a neat,
right.
I drew a little bit of a parallel.
Yeah, well, and you can imagine Paul, who is an Old Testament scholar himself, is drawing, you know, the strength from those kinds of situations, right? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Joseph, right? Those guys are examples to people in prison, right? And you can imagine Paul meditating on those passages, right? And how do I posture myself? And he's thinking, you know, Daniel, Shadrach, Joseph. He's thinking about these guys that had gone before him in these kinds of circumstances. And we should do the same. And Paul is very deliberately, I mean, think about what he's doing for the church. The church is about to enter into a period of intense persecution, right? Where people are going to be arrested, people are going to be burned at the stake, they're going to be fed to the lions, they're going to go through all kinds of terrible things. And Paul is, in essence, through this experience and through this letter, he's laying out for them the kinds of attitudes that they should have in those circumstances. And certainly for us, right? So we think about the value of his imprisonment. Had he never been imprisoned, these words would have never been written. Had these words never been written, we wouldn't have "For to me to live is Christ, to die is gain." I mean, what would the Bible be without that statement?
Yeah.
Right? One of the hallmark statements of the New Testament.
Paul has the advantage of knowing his history,
mm-hmm.
his Jewish history.
Yeah.
And if you read that history, the Jews shouldn't have survived.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no real reason, if you look at other cultures, that they shouldn't have been assimilated into somebody, Assyria, Babylon, etc. But yet they maintain their identity and they maintain their monotheism. And it's a pretty incredible thing when you stop and think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the peoples around them and their cultures and their religion and their worship practices didn't survive, but the Jews did. And they had to come back and rebuild and restore. I'm doing Zechariah on Tuesday mornings, and they come out of exile, and yep. not everybody comes back, just the remnant. And they have to rebuild and they have to restart. Because, I mean, it's all part of God's plan, and it's just amazing how they endure.
Yeah.
Even today, look at them. They're surrounded by their enemies, just like in the Old Testament. Everybody is against them, and yet they're there. And Paul has this history. He can look back and he can say, we survived it. We lived it.
Yep.
And if it happened once, can happen again.
That's right. That's right.
So
it's a history of resurrection.
And and those people who know the history know it's possible because they can go back and cite it and look at it and see how God's working through these people. If you don't believe they're God's people, read their history.
And Paul is proclaiming the fruition of that history, the culmination of what the whole history tells.
Yeah.
He's proclaiming the what they're looking back at. That
that's right.
Points to, and here it is.
That's right. The Messiah, right here. Verse 21.
Yeah.
For to me, to live is Christ, to die is gain. I want to take a little time to think about this statement because it is not only just, you know, a great verse to memorize, it is a powerful statement. What do we see in here? What's Paul saying?
He's looking forward to end times. If he dies, he gets to go to heaven. And that's his end times.
That's right.
And while he's alive, he's consumed with taking the gospel and growing churches and
right.
influencing the Christians.
That's right.
Influencing the Jews.
Yeah. For me to live is Christ. I mean, that's a powerful statement. I'm not even alive anymore. I mean, it's not about me. It's not about my comfort. It's not about my desires. It's not about my goals. It's not about anything. It's not about my enjoyment. For me to live is Christ. Whatever Christ's priorities are, the advancement of his kingdom, his name, everything that has to do with Jesus Christ. If I live, it's for his purposes and to advance his causes, not my own. If I die, that's candy for me because then I get to be with Christ. And I'm not in the clink any longer and I'm not getting beat up anymore and I'm not walking across the whole known world any longer, right? I get to chill in heaven with Jesus. That's a perspective that most of us in modern Christianity do not have. Right? Because we're still living life for ourselves. And me included. Right? But Paul is, he is so radical, so focused in his priority. It's about Jesus. He ceased to exist a long time ago. You know, Paul was a persecutor of the church. And I think he really believed when the Lord saved him on the Damascus Road that his life ended there. I think he realized that I deserve to be burned to a crisp on the Damascus Road. I deserve the wrath of God for what I've done. And as a result, my life belongs to Christ. And anything that I desired before, I renounce. And he is totally focused on the Lord. On Sunday night, we had the Hope is Alive group here. So we had all four houses of Hope is Alive. Two men's houses, two women's houses, all recovering people from addictions and drug and alcohol abuse. And an amazing ministry, amazing people. And I had the opportunity to share with them that night. And as I thought about these folks, you know, their lives, many of them, destroyed, right? They had everything, right? Some of them, there's, you know, John Schimmer. Yes. You know, John had a career as a banker. He was successful. He had a family. He had children. He had all of these different things.
It must be.
Thank you, sir.
It's obviously raining.
So, all of those things, right? And he lost it all. Right? Lost his wife, lost his kids, lost his career, his home, everything. Everything gone. And now the Lord restored him 2 years after that restoration, 2 years of restoration. And now his life is about Jesus. His life's about Jesus. He says, I drive a little car. Now he drives a little Mini Cooper. He says, I drive a little car to remind me that my life is little. Right? It's no longer the big car like before. I'm driving a little car to remind me of where I am today. And he's living his life as service to the Lord. And I thought, boy, when you've been to that, when you've gotten there, right? And God redeems you and saves you, it brings you to a different place. And I think Paul was at that place, you know? He was at that place where he realized that God's wrath was upon him. Boom. And, yeah.
We had a little different take on verse 21.
Okay.
As it applies to last year. You know,
yeah.
We were warned that if we didn't do such and such, that we were all going to die. And, you know, basically the whole world bought into that. But especially also the church. Mm-hmm. You know, and we just wondered, why were Christians so fearful? Why were they afraid to die? Here he says, I desire to depart. Mm-hmm. He wants to be with Christ. He wants to be in heaven. Wouldn't we all want to be there with Christ? And a man, you know, wonderful Christian man here a few weeks ago, he said, you know, when I heard the announcement and all of this, I was afraid. A strong Christian man, he admitted, I was afraid. And right. We're like, then again, you know, we have a personal reason. We want to be with our loved ones in heaven.
Right.
But we want to be with Christ. And he says he wants to be. Why were we so afraid? He did not give us a spirit of fear.
Right.
But right. That was what it was. 2020 was fear.
Right.
Across the board.
Right.
You got to be afraid. Whatever.
Yeah.
And it continues today. Some people I'm hearing say, I'm going to wear a mask the rest of my life. Wow.
Wow. Yeah. Well, we have no reason to be afraid of death. You know, and I think of Jim Cowan. Again, we're back to Jim. In the hospital, he has no reason to fear. Because why? Because his battle's over. You know, for me, to die is gain. He's lived and his life has been for Christ. And if that road has come to an end, then like Paul, he can say, I rejoice. Right? Isn't that such a relief for us? Even as we get older and we think about as death is coming, it's coming. It's coming for all of us, right? But as we get older, we begin to think about that more. And we think about, you know, and we watch our friends go through those kinds of things. And it's like, but yet we don't have to be afraid. And we can trust, we can rest in the sovereignty of God. That if I live, it's because God has a purpose and a plan for my life. He's got things that he needs to do through me for his kingdom. And if I die, candy, right? Then I get that's the reward. Because this part is over. And eternity begins. Woohoo! Right? And so, that's easy to say when we're not at death's door, but yet the Apostle Paul was, right? At any moment, his life could have been taken away. And he had come to that level of faith that he could make this statement with confidence. Yes?
I've been doing Acts in another Bible study, and when he was doing his...
You're not allowed to go to another Bible study.
Oh, no, I need to tell you. I'm doing another one, too. when he was doing his missionary journeys, at one point he was told, don't go to Jerusalem, they're going to, you know, they're going to crucify, you know.
Right.
Don't go to Jerusalem, don't go to Jerusalem. Do you think Paul's basic boldness, you know, stems from this statement that I don't care what they're going to do to me, I needed to get to Jerusalem, and then he could have, he did kind of parlay, you know, some of I'm a Roman citizen, you know, to get to Rome, but he knew at each step what the ultimate would probably be. And that's what he, you know.
Yeah, I think Paul, Paul was chasing death. I think death was around the corner for him all the time. Mm-hmm. And he just made a decision, that he was already on borrowed time. I think he came to the understanding that he should have died on the Damascus Road because he deserved the wrath of God for what he had done. And so his life was an offering to the Lord. And that's why I think these guys coming out of Hope is Alive, they have, many of them have that kind of a testimony. I destroyed my family. I destroyed my life. I deserve God's wrath. And God has had mercy on me. So all that I have is for him. I can live my life free. There's all those other things have been taken away. It's an incredible realization.
We know, too, when you've been a slave to whatever.
Right.
Money, addiction. And all of a sudden you hit rock bottom.
Right.
There's no way to go but up.
That's right.
I mean, and, you know, we all have to answer the question that Christ posed to his disciples. Who do you say that I am?
That's right.
That's the bottom line.
Absolutely. Yet what shall I choose? I don't know. I'm torn between the desire to depart and be with Christ, as you were saying, which is better by far, but it's more necessary for you that I remain in the body. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain, and I will continue with all of you for your progress and joy. Again, the word joy. In the faith. So that through my being with you, again, your boasting in Christ Jesus will abound on account of me. So I think this is really an interesting passage because Paul seems to be, he seems to have the power of his own life and death in his hands. It's like, what shall I choose? You know, and maybe the Lord, you know, spoke to him and said, it's up to you, dude. You can pick it. You can come home or you can stay. And he's wrestling with this because, boy, wouldn't it be nice to be with Jesus? I think he had that kind of intimacy with Christ. I think he and Jesus hung out, you know, in the spirit. And he longed to be with the Lord. But yet, at the end of the day, he says, there's still more for me to do. I mean, for you. Philippians, Philippian church, all churches, there's still more for me to do. There's still more that I need to give. And so I'm going to stay for your benefit, not for mine. My benefit would be just to end it here, be done, go home. But yet I'm going to continue on in the struggle to make your joy complete, to be able to advance your faith. Wow. It's just really powerful, isn't it? To think of that level of selflessness. But it's that perspective about death that really grabs me. I want to have that because I don't want to be afraid. I don't want to be afraid to die. You know, I don't want to make decisions, you know, just like we were talking about. We want to make decisions based on our fear of death. We want to make decisions based on our desire to see the gospel advanced.
Right? I think going back to Jim Callan, I can remember the day in Bible study, again over at Mazio's, where he was saying, I still have work to do.
Yeah.
And as long as I have work to do, God is going to see that I'm still here.
That's right.
And that was when he was in the ministry.
Right.
And he's continued to. So he certainly fulfilled that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The mission statement of victory is I can't memorize it, but it's something to the fact that, you know, I'm here for purpose and the best is yet to come.
Yeah.
So.
Right. It's that perspective that death is not a negative in the life of a Christian. We are not those who die without hope.
Well, it also seems like in that verse 23, it kind of reinforces the fact that, hey, there's at death, I'm going to be brought immediately into Christ. And,
right.
You know, there's no, like, delay.
Yes.
It's like, hey, I've got this option. I can be with Christ today or go ahead and continue doing my work.
Right.
That I have before me. So.
Right. Which is hard and suffering. Because for Paul, I think everything was hard. He never really had an easy day. You know, he was either in prison, or he was walking, or he was getting beat up, or he was preaching. I think, you know, there were very few days when Paul really, I mean, had it easy. He had the weight of the establishment of the church on his shoulders. He carried a lot. It was far easier to go home and be with the Lord, but yet he wanted to do everything he could for the cause of Christ. So we'll stop there. We have a few more verses in this chapter to finish up next week, and then we get into chapter 2, which is Philippians chapter 2, I must say. And that's amazing. So we'll